This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson. From the great melting pot to a salad bowl, the United States has long been described as a multicultural nation. But some international scholars say it's not multiculturality we should be striving for, but interculturality. Duke University and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill are hosting a conference this week on interculturality and the arts. Scholars are gathering to exchange stories, share histories, and dissect what it means to strive for an intercultural world. Jean-Marie Gustave Leclésio and Issa Ascarali are co-founders of the Foundation for Interculturality and Peace and will present at the conference. Mr. Leclésio has written over 50 books of cultural history and fiction and is the winner of the 2008 Nobel Prize for Literature. And Mr. Ascarali is an activist, Mauritian cultural scholar, and professor at the Mauritius Institute of Education. We're very pleased to have both of them on the program today. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Issa, I will start with you. Explain this concept of interculturality.
So if I can, in a few words, well, define interculturality, it's a new way of conceiving identity, transcending multiculturalism, promoting genuine exchange among cultures, thinking and formulating historical experiences, denying any physis of the clash of civilization. So diffusing the war of languages, analyzing the relationships between culture, information, and communication in the age of globalization, building bridges between the literatures of the world, exploring not the ritual, but the cultural dimension of religion, and finally introducing this new way of seeing and acting, nouvelle manière de voir et d'agir in French, at school, the meeting space for a shared common life. So, briefly, what it's all about.
Well, and it's very important that that this, I think, for folks to understand that this comes out of, that you're both coming from the perspective of Mauritius. Issa, you're from Mauritius, and Jean-Marie, your family is from Mauritius, and you have a Mauritian nationality. Just for those in the U.S. who may not know that much, just Jean-Marie, tell us a little bit about Mauritius. I mean, how big a country are we talking about, and what is the colonial history of Mauritius?
It's a very small country. It would be about the size of Manhattan, I would say, slightly bigger than Manhattan. But in fact, it's a big country because it's heavily populated. It's populated with very diverse populations. So it makes it a small continent more than an island. And by the recent years, Mauritius has shown a strong will to emerge from its state of former colony. It's in fact it's a thriving country with a lot of opportunities and a very strong personality, and it learned to develop that, and it had to raise from that colonial past, which is a very heavy past, and to get its independence. In fact, it's a republic since 1968. It's an autonomous republic. It has no resources apart from its own, and it has to challenge the times. So for a long time, it was a sugar type of state, a sugar island. Then when the price of sugar got too low, they tried to invent something else, so it became an industrial country, and it developed tourism as well because it's a very beautiful place with marvelous beaches and extraordinary landscapes. And now that tourism is declining because there is a heavy concurrence all over the world, it's trying to develop other ways of surviving. So it's a very very interesting country for its will of independence. And I really appreciate belonging part to this country.
Well, and as you say, you belong part to this country, but you've also been a traveler all your life. You spent a lot of time in Mexico and in the U.S. I believe you spent 4 years in the jungles of Panama. Talk a bit about how your life as a traveler has informed this sense of interculturality and how that plays out in your work.
Well, for me, it's not theoretical. It's more like my own experience. Being born a Mauritian when I was living in France, it was not easy because I was raised as a Mauritian in middle of French people. And I was drinking tea, they were drinking coffee. I was eating rice, they were eating corn or potatoes. And all those sort of things differentiated me very much from the others. And I knew from my father and my mother that I would have to leave the place where I was because Mauritians are all the time traveling. It's a small country, so they have to go out of this country. My father and my mother's father went out of Mauritius very early. They had to leave the country to find their way of life. So I knew I would have to travel. And being a Mauritian gives you the sense of adaptability because you know that you belong to a small place and you have to deal with the others to adapt yourself. It's the reason why I traveled. And I spent some time, as you said, in the U.S., some time in Panama. It was my own choice. Sometimes in Mexico. I lived in a very small place in Mexico, a small village in the middle of Mexico for many years. And I think this links me to interculturality because being a Mauritian, you have to believe that there is a need to adaptation. You have to believe that you could change yourself. This is mainly what interculturality means for me, is the capability of changing yourself and getting the better all over the places where you go.
So, Issa, in that sense, is the in your push for interculturality, is it in a way saying that people around the world should be a bit more like Mauritians? I mean, perhaps not with necessarily the actual traveling or living all over the world. That may not be necessary. But to think in that way of adaptability and seeing oneself as a global citizen rather than a local citizen.
It's an asset, multiculturalism. We have all that. But there are dangers in that people tend to live, to build walls around themselves, around their communities, for example. So we must go beyond that, meaning the Mauritian experience up to now shows us that we should transcend this multiculturalism. I would say that interculturality, it's when you look at the history of cultures, what are cultures? They are not commodities that one can have like cars or shoes. They are in a state of continuous development and of dynamic change while maintaining constant interaction with other cultures. And that is the reason why interculturality sees different cultures not as competitors for the title of the greatest or most developed, but rather as the movement of a majestic symphonic whole.
Well, and I mean, Jean-Marie, as Issa was just saying, of course, there are many people who hold to the old cultural structures, or what some might call the old cultural structures, but those are also important, right? And yes, cultures are constantly shifting and adapting and changing, but there are things that people want to hold on to that are important to their identities. What separates, what keeps interculturality from being just a, well, we're all the same, and let's just sort of let's erase culture, if you will. What is that line?
Well, I don't think the point of interculturality is to wipe out cultures. On the contrary, it's an added valor to each culture, because what we are promoting is the encounter between cultures, not denying those cultures, but that those cultures could interfere and could exchange and could be modified each by the other. In fact, we did not invent that concept. You know that some states in the world already practice interculturality. The most intercultural countries, we would find that Ecuador, for instance, is a very profound intercultural country where there is even a ministry of the intercultural, because in Ecuador, in the schools, they teach to the children several languages, not just one language, but several languages, Spanish, of course, which is the official language, but then one or two vernacular languages, that means American Indian languages, which are be taught, not necessarily the language from your community, but could be the language for your neighbor's community. And then an international language or so-called international language, it could be Arabic or could be English or could be Chinese. This is the choice of the family or of the children. And so some countries have already the practice of exchanging. And this is the reason why we are very much interested by schools and by education, because we think at the FIP, we think that the action has to deal with the children first. First with the children.
So let's talk about that, about interculturality in practice and what it means on the ground. And Issa, I know that you do workshops and programs in schools in Mauritius, and now you're here in North Carolina, and you'll be meeting with some local school officials here in North Carolina to talk about that. What are these programs? What do you do when you go into schools and talk to children?
Well, the foundation organized, for example, in all primary schools of Mauritius and Rodrigues, an exhibition, a national competition. So the exhibition, so we had the posters, 10 posters in all public schools, and then the people, the pupils had to express themselves in three categories: writing, painting, drawing, and then slam or theater, you see. Meaning from these 10 posters, and the 10 posters illustrate that idea of all related, all different. And then it's not sufficient, so we read, we make them read, and now another phase is that we help them to express themselves after reading. So in all these, in the theater workshop, the dance workshop and all that.
Well, and so now you've come to the United States and you're doing this conference here at Duke and UNC. Jean-Marie, what do you see as the application of this specifically to the United States, where, as I said earlier, it's a country that very much prides itself on multiculturalism, on a combination of cultural preservation and also assimilation. What do you see as the application specifically here?
Well, I think the United States would be a perfect laboratory for this experience of interculturality, because it has all the assets of interculturality, all the elements are present. The great difficulty, Issa Asghari mentioned it, is the danger of communalism. The fact that in the United States has been favorized, the different communities have favorized a type of action. Each community has the power to act for themselves, but they are not interested in their neighbors. One thing is good, it's very good that they would be fighting racism and would be fighting exclusion and discrimination. But the other side, something which is not favorable, is that those actions deal only with one community. So I think it could be a perfect laboratory if those communities were communicating. I live in New Mexico, and of course in New Mexico, the city is divided in two parts. There is one part which is Anglo, so all the people who are not from Spanish origin, they send their kids to those schools, and they are on the east side of the city. And on the west and south side of the city, all the Spanish-speaking communities send their children. So in fact, you have two ghettos, and they never meet, or very rarely meet. So this has to change.
But as you were suggesting, that that these communities often formed, I mean, certainly in the United States and perhaps as well in Mauritius, the culture forms largely in response to oppression or being left out, right? And as you were saying, cultures are constantly changing. How do you promote interculturality across cultures that have in some ways formed culturally in opposition to one another?
Yes, that's a very good question. I expected that question coming to the United States, because you are thinking perhaps about the Afro-American community, what we struggle for for the against discrimination, injustice, and all that. So my point of view is that if any community, what you call community, but for me, I go beyond that idea of community. We are all human beings. So we have affiliation, but I see a man or a woman as a man or woman. So if you have a community who has to struggle for, if it's persecuted, for example, struggle is not really against another community. It's the struggle is for justice, for equity, for fair play. That's the reason of the struggle. And when it's over, it's okay. Meaning we should go beyond that. And one important point, as history has proved, that even in the struggle of one community, persecuted community, against another, generally the majority, people from that other community, majority, took position. For example, in South Africa, you had members of the white community. I put in inverted commas. For me, you don't have black, white, yellow, and all that. I see anybody as a human being. Members of that white community, between inverted commas, condemn apartheid. Many writers, for example, Nadine Gordimer. So I think in the States it was the same thing. You did not have only people of the Afro-American community condemning that situation formally. So I think it should be that we fight the sin, not the sinner. Mm-hmm. And one thing also which is very important, interculturality by itself cannot bring peace. By itself. First of all, we should have justice, equity, and fair play. Interculturality comes afterwards. But once we have these, we don't have racism, injustice, and all that, then it's interculturality. So can we achieve really interculturality.
Well, we just have a moment left, but Jean-Marie, one final question. This conference is about interculturality and the arts, and I want to ask you how you think that the novel in particular is a great vehicle for interculturality as the author of many novels yourself.
Well, I strongly believe that art is intercultural by essence, because especially literature. Because a writer does not express oneself just for his or her community. A writer expresses himself or herself for the whole humanity. Otherwise, what would be the need to write? It would be senseless. And then literature has proved along the centuries that it was a good way of meeting the others. If you read Cervantes or if you read Shakespeare, you don't have to be Spanish or English to understand what is said there. And if you read Mauritian literature, you don't have to have traveled to Mauritius to understand what is said. So it's a good way to meet the others, to penetrate the soul of the others and to modify yourself. Because to read Shakespeare or to read Cervantes, you have to be in a certain way part of their own history and their country. You don't have to know everything, but you have to accept to be the other. And I think this is the role of art, is to make you feel and accept to be the other. And even more than that, you have to love to be the other. You have to volunteer to be the other. It's not just something passive. It has to be active. I think literature is a very activist way of asserting interculturality.
Well, Jean-Marie Gustave Lucrezio is a writer, professor, and winner of the 2008 Nobel Prize for Literature. Issa Ascarali is a professor at the Mauritius Institute of Education. They are both co-founders of the Foundation for Interculturality and Peace. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And they are part of the Conference on Interculturality and the Arts, sponsored by the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and Duke University. The conference runs until April 19th. For more information, visit wunc.org. Up next, local undocumented youth seek to come out of the shadows through art. Stay tuned.